So glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. Turning our attention now to the Brewers and maybe the history of the team a little bit too. Tom Hadrecourt, our guest, back with us to cover the Brewers. He does it all the time. He does it every day for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Been named Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year by the National Sports Media Association four times. Also the author of the book Turning 50, The Brewers Celebrate a Half Century in Milwaukee. So how do you think the Brewers are doing this year? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. Tom Hadrecourt, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Larry. Good to be with you. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I was thinking about you. Was it Saturday night? I watched the whole series again. Well, the first three games I saw, the Brewers and the Dodgers. And I was going to go to bed, and then I just thought, you know, I can't go to bed. This is such an exciting game. And it goes into the 11th inning, through 11 innings, just an absolutely fantastic game. And I stayed up and listened to sort of the after program and heard you asking some questions. And I thought to myself, well, now Tom's got to put all this together around midnight, write a story.
Yeah, I didn't get to bed. I'm too old to stay up that late, Larry. I'm too old to stay up that late. But, you know, there's been a lot of debate. There's a lot of division on the rule that baseball put in last year during COVID ball of when the games go into extra innings, they put a runner on second base. So they're trying to prevent games from going on and on and on into a ridiculous number of innings and hours. And so it creates instant drama. You know, you've got a runner on second, no outs, and here we go. But so the Dodgers scored one run in the top of the 10th. Then the Brewers scored one run in the bottom of the 10th. So one extra inning wasn't enough. So on we went to the 11th inning. Dodgers scored two runs in the top of the 11th. And then the Brewers scored three runs in the bottom of the 11th to win the game. But for a minute there, we were saying, oh, my goodness, they're going to just tie the game. And here we go to the 12th. And we were going to say, this rule's not working. We're still continuing on. But it did work. And it creates a lot of instant drama and a lot of angst as well. And you know, you got to admit, it does your attention span is peaked there when all of a sudden – you know, you have a runner on second and no outs. You feel a little bit for the pitcher coming into the game because he comes into a jam immediately. You know, he's done nothing wrong and he's got a runner on second base. You know.
Well, at least they don't. He doesn't get the run counting against him as I don't think as a pitcher.
It's not. No, you're right. It's not an earned run against him. That would really be unfair. You know, let's give this guy – you know, you can be the loser, though, if that run scores and then your team doesn't match it. You get a loss, but at least you don't get an earned run. You do get a loss. I mean, it has to be assigned to somebody. So, patently unfair to make it earned, right? That's, I mean, the guy did nothing wrong. He didn't put the guy on second base. Baseball did.
Well – I tell you what, that game, well, that whole series, I unfortunately had another engagement and I couldn't watch on Sunday, but on Saturday, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday games were, and especially that Saturday game was, I don't know how you could get much more fun watching a sporting event than that particular game. It felt like a playoff game. And you know what? There was some timely hitting by the Brewers, and that hitting has been a little bit of, I guess if you're going to look at an issue, that's been a bit of an issue from time to time with the Brewers.
It has. A lot of it's had to do with, at least we think it has. A lot of it can be attributed probably to injuries. You know, do you know at the end of the day Sunday, they had 17 players on the injured list. 17.
Yeah.
You know, you only have 26 on your actual roster. So their 40-man roster was accounted for almost entirely with injuries and players who were left to be, you know, on their active roster. They got two really important ones back yesterday, Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, who had been both of them out for about 3 weeks. So I do think some of their offensive woes are attributable to guys that are missing. But we'll find out how much because they're starting to get some of these guys back now. But it's been all about the pitching and also defense for the Brewers. Their pitching's been fantastic. Their offense has been, you know, just enough to survive. They've lost two in a row, so their record's down to 17 and 12. But considering the number of injuries they've had, if you would have told anybody they'd be 17 and 12 through 29 games, they probably would have taken it. And it's just shown us, Larry, what we've known all along. Pitching's the most important part of the game because their pitching's been very good.
But I would also add to that depth.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they've had no choice, though. No, they've discovered depth they didn't know they've had. You know, and you know, football has that next man up mentality because they have a lot of injuries, right? In football, you always hear next man up. Well, the Brewers have had the next man up, the second man up, the third man up. You know, they've gone through a lot of players. They got to the point where they had so few catchers that they called up a 22-year-old kid, Feliciano. And you said you watched that game Saturday night.
Yeah.
He scored the winning run. He scored the winning run. You know, he walked and scored the winning run. They got sent back down the next day because they reacquired Jacob Nottingham, who they had lost to Seattle earlier in the week on a waiver claim. But that kid, you know, he'll be back in the major leagues. Remember the name Mario Feliciano. He'll be the Brewers' regular catcher one day in the future. But at least he's got a story to tell about his one day so far in the major leagues of scoring the winning run in a game.
Well, I tell you what, he looked great at the plate, I thought, to take some of the pitches he took that were balls. I think
Yes.
Your first time ever in front of a pitcher in a game like that with all that on the line and to be so good at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, his instinct was probably to swing away, right? You know, and you can imagine the pressure he was feeling and his heart being up in his throat a little bit. So we got to talk to him that day, and what a day. He's only 22 years old, but he'll never forget that day, which was, what, May 1st, right? Saturday, May 1. He'll never forget that day because he said earlier in the day his 2-year-old daughter said Papa for the first time. So, so you know, other than his daughter saying his name for the first time and scoring the winning run in his first major league game, just another day in his life, right?
It actually had to be just an absolutely amazing thing. When do you think he's back?
Well, you know, he hasn't even played in Double A yet, except for 3 games. But they did assign him to the Triple A roster, so it could be at any time. Injuries, you know, could dictate sooner than later, but you know, I think we can start talking about next year or the year after that for him being the Brewers regular catcher. You know, today's a momentous day in baseball, Larry. It's a good thing we're talking on the show today. The minor leagues are back today. You know, the minor league baseball did not play last year because of COVID. A completely dark year for the minor leagues, and a lot of communities really count on their teams, you know, to provide entertainment, help the economy, all kinds of things. So today, with a 1-month delay because of COVID, the minor leagues are back in action. So up the road in Appleton, the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers are going to be playing for the first time since 2019. This is huge. All those minor league players had nowhere to play last year, and all of those cities had no teams in action. And so this is big. This is really big. Minor league baseball is back. I know so many people are excited today that are living those communities that have minor league baseball that they can finally go. And a lot of them are restricted, you know, in percentage in the stands like we are in Milwaukee with 25%. But it beats not having it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And for those communities, the income that comes in from – you know, just players, just people coming to a game, and you buy your beer and your brat or your hot dog or whatever it is, and maybe people come from other communities. Economically, right. It's big for those communities.
Right, and you can relate to this. They're on the radio again. They're back on the radio. You know, there's money to be made there, right? Advertising and stuff, you know. So not that if you'll make any money during my segment today. I don't usually help that. But you know, just being back on the radio. And some of them have television contracts as well, and there are minor league baseball apps that you can watch games on. But just going back over to the airways, right? I mean, this is big.
Tom Hardercourt, our guest today. We got lots to talk with him about with the Brewers, and we maybe talk about his book a bit. I think we talked last time a little bit about it, but we might get that back in there too. But what do you think about the Brewers? Questions about them? You got the perfect guy to answer them, Tom Hardercourt from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He'll be with us up till 12:30 today. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Tom. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Glad you could spend some of your day with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, back with us to talk about the Brewers and maybe a little about the history of the team. Tom Hardercourt, he covers the Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, has been named Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year four times. He's also author of the book Turning 50, The Brewers Celebrate a Half Century in Milwaukee. So, comments or questions about the Brewers this year? Love to have you part of the conversation. Have you attended a game? I haven't talked to a fan yet who's attended a game, and I'd love to hear what the experience is like for you. Give a call, 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. And John in Middleton's up here. Let's talk with John. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. I was just thinking maybe Tom would share some of his thoughts about the old time days. Like, where are they now, you know? Where's the kid now? Things like that.
Yeah. Tom, what about it? What are some of those old-timers? Where are they now?
Well, the thing that's been most interesting about having a long career is I'm starting to see the sons of players I covered in Major League Baseball. I guess that's good because it beats the alternative, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not being, you know, but you know, I covered Tony Gwynn, and then his son Tony Gwynn Jr. played for the Brewers. You know, Dante Bichette, who played for the Brewers, his son Bo Bichette is now playing for Toronto, and just on and on and on. I see these. I assume I'm going to see Prince Fielder's sons be playing in the major leagues at some point. So you have this perspective of seeing these guys in the clubhouse with their little kids, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, those little kids are coming into the clubhouse, and now they're players. You know, so you get to see multi-generations. Well, one thing I have a very interesting perspective on is the Brewers manager, Craig Counsell. Because when I started covering the Brewers in the 80s, his dad, John, worked in the front office. He was in, you know, the Public Speaking Bureau and Community Relations. And little Craig, who grew up in Whitefish Bay, he'd be running around in his Little League uniform. And in that book that you just mentioned, The Brewers at 50, there's a great Journal Sentinel photograph of Craig in his Little League uniform with holding some kind of trophy. And posing with Deion James and another Brewer, I forget who, but maybe Raleigh Fingers, I believe. And so I used to see him run around as a little kid. Then next thing you know, I hear he's off at Notre Dame playing baseball. And then next thing you know, he surfaces in the major leagues. And I see him, you know, with Colorado. And then he goes to Florida and wins a World Series with the Marlins. And then goes to Arizona and wins a World Series with the Diamondbacks. And next thing you know, he's playing for the Brewers, and he played his last several years of his major league career with the Brewers, and then retired. And so then, you know, we hear he's in the front office, and then next thing you know, he's the manager. So I've literally known the manager of the Brewers since he was a little boy. So hopefully, if familiarity does breed contempt, he must have a lot of contempt for me.
Oh, man. Well, John, thanks. Kathleen, let's in Milwaukee, let's go to you. Hi, Kathleen. Oh, I think we lost her. Well, let's see. Tim in Chippewa Falls. Let's go there. Hi, Tim.
Hi. My question is in regards to the new logo. I grew up in the 80s, and I like the baseball team, but I don't like this new logo. I like the M on the cap.
Wow. Wow, that's an interesting view, because I think it was tremendously popular when they came back to the ball and glove. Marketing is everything in sports, right? And their marketing, their sales told them people wanted that ball and glove logo back. And so, you know, it's not exactly the same as it was the first time around, but pretty close. But that was almost by, you know, acclamation of their fans, really. You know, what's old is what's new is old again, or what's old is new again, whichever way that's said. And so they, you know, they rebranded for their 50th anniversary last year, and then daggone if COVID didn't stop, you know, the fans from coming out and shorten the season. So I got a Journal Sentinel book out on the 50th anniversary, but the team never got to actually celebrate it, you know, with their fans. It was not fair to them, but they rebranded. But, you know, that ball and glove logo is so clever and so iconic. You know, a college kid won a competition back in the 80s or 90s to get that logo. But every now and then you do find someone who's oblivious to it, who also discovers that's a M and a B, and they're just astonished. They're astonished. Hey, this is an M and a B. Really? Welcome to the world. Welcome back from Mars, or wherever you were that you didn't realize that.
Well, you know, I've still got that, my old cap. I've got the old version of the M and B, and that's the one I always wear to the games when I go to the games, sure.
They wore that M for several years. It had a little barley leaf under it, I believe. They went back to that ball and glove, but they were almost, you know, it was just by the insistence of fans that they went back to that.
So there you go, Tim. It's going to probably be there for a while. Thanks a lot for calling. You wear your old cap. Just hang on to the old one. It'll come back eventually.
Everything comes back.
Yeah. Thanks again, Tim. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Kyle in Wausau. Kyle, hi.
I'm doing well, Larry. How are you doing today?
Just great. Did you attend the game?
Well, thanks for taking the call. Milwaukee's two and a half hour hop, skip, and jump to the south. I was going to go right back to Tim's call right prior, that ball and glove iconic symbol. I'm 41 now, grew up in Billings, Montana. That's the iconic symbol that the rest of us local yokels from the rest of the, you know, lower 48 recognize the crew is with the ball and glove symbol. So just the FYI right there. Those marketing teams, they know what they're doing. You look at these marketing research firms for any of the four major market sports, they know what they're doing. The NHL turned that product around right quick when they alleviated the fighting from the game. So they know what they're doing. I'll go, you know, go back to the Montana. When you're a Montana kid growing up, 56 counties, fourth largest state in the union, they don't have any pro sports. There's under 1 million people in the great state of Montana. Guess what everybody from Montana is a fan of? WGN. Cubs games were syndicated in Yellowstone County, Billings. So growing up for the first decade, you're a Cubbies fan with all the good Cubs players. You know, I think Cubs are world-renowned, if you will. We moved to 1986. We moved to the Twin Cities, a suburb. I'm assuming it's in Hennepin County, Eden Prairie. We had 87 and 91 World Series tickets, 12 rows behind Brian Harper for the Twins. We got to see that. And then in 91, we moved to Wisconsin, and right quick with the culture for any of the sports in Wisconsin, it sucks you right in. So specifically going to what's now referred to as American Family Field, I just recently have taken, right prior to COVID, obviously, I would take a 4- and 6-year-old down there, a 2-hour trip. The facility is so friendly, so convenient. You can eat at the park. You can get beverages at the park. You can get to any amenities or restaurants surrounding the field. And it's just amazing. I've spent time probably, I'd say, 25, 30 professional venues in the country. I put this one in my top 5. So American Family Field, it does the ticket for the family. And then you want to talk about costs. Being in central Wisconsin currently, you can cruise down to Chicago and get games. You're a good distance away from, you know, Chicago, Milwaukee, Minneapolis. You can go to Minneapolis. You can do a hockey game, a baseball game, eat and drink. If you want to go down to Chicago at, like, the United Center, the costs are so exuberant, it's kind of scary. A ticket alone in Chicago is going to be about as much as a ticket, one individual ticket at Chicago, at the United Center or a venue down there, is going to be what your trip is for all of Milwaukee or Minnesota combined, and you can even ancillarily throw a hotel and food in there and a ticket.
Well, the Brewers will be happy. The Brewers will be happy to hear that endorsement of American Family Field, won't they, Larry? They, I do go all around the country, and COVID has changed a little bit of that. I am in Philadelphia right now. We're not back to traveling to every city yet because of various restrictions and protocols and stuff. But you'll hear people say that come in, even visiting writers I talk to. They really love, you know, American Family Field, obviously known as Miller Park for 20 years. But one of the things that we love about it, and we certainly experienced in our typical Milwaukee April weather, was having the roof. You know, it's we just rarely have that roof open in the month of April because spring, as we all know, is a rumor. You know, just a rumor, not really a fact. Yeah, you guys have it a little better in Madison, Larry, and I think especially this year, because it just seems to be a lot cooler by the lake this year. And I live over by the lake, and believe me, I can vouch for it. It's cold over there. And so that roof just makes all the difference in the world. And especially for fans like the one we were just talking to, who has a drive to get there, right? You don't want to drive 2 hours to Milwaukee and then have the game called off by weather.
Yeah.
You know, as gorgeous as Target Field is in Minneapolis, the people that go there will tell you it is quite chilly early in the year there. And so that roof, there was a lot of debate 25 years ago about roof or no roof in Milwaukee, and the roof people finally won. And, you know, the Brewers, for as small a market as they are, and they are one of the smallest markets in Major League Baseball, in, you know, pre-COVID years, they regularly would be in the top third of the 30 teams in attendance, and that's extraordinary in their market.
It is indeed. What's it like? Of course, you're covering, you know, you may be at American Family Field to cover the game, but with the smaller number of fans, what's that whole experience like, Tom?
It's been welcomed, I'll tell you that. Is it the, you know, the packed house 40,000 that we're accustomed to prior to COVID? No, it's not. But compared to last year when there was nobody in the stands, I can't tell you how much difference it is. You know, we're averaging like 11,000, maybe 12,000 a game. They're at 25% capacity, and they're spread out in pods of 2, 4, and 6 fans. But, you know, when the Brewers discovered when they've got a big inning going, well, you were talking about that game Saturday night in the 11th inning, you should have been able to hear the noise. You know, people were into that game, and it just makes all the difference in the world. And the players would be the first to tell you they totally underestimated what it was going to be like last year playing with no fans. It was like playing in the public library. You know, they piped in some noise, but it wasn't the same. You could tell it was piped in. So the players finally realized from firsthand experience how much energy and adrenaline they get from the crowd itself. And they are so happy, even at 25%, that some fans are back in the stands.
Yeah, I can believe it. And I know the after the game was over on Saturday night, listening to the after game comments, the announcers were talking about how loud it was. And you could kind of tell it was noisy. And it did almost sound like a normal crowd listening to it or watching it on TV. But they were so amazed at the how loud it was. The place was shaking with 12,000 people there.
I know. So just imagine what it's like when they fill the place up. But it's just so welcome. You know, we finally have atmosphere again. You know, they play these games for fans to come and watch them, right? You know, and be there. You know, that's with no fans, there's no sports. And so, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, are welcome to the game back just because they can watch it on TV. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that, or listen to it on the radio. But being there in person, and the tickets are, you know, they're not that easy to get at 25% either. So no. It's a little bit like winning the lottery just to get a ticket to a game now. And the Brewers do hope at some point the health department will let them, you know, boost the capacity up a little bit. They're selling tickets, as a matter of fact, on a month-to-month basis. And the reason they're doing that is they hope that, you know, when the next month comes around, they'll be able to have a higher capacity. So right now we're still at 25%. But now that the vaccine rates are going up and the weather's warming up and so on and so forth, they're hoping, you know, they'll be able to increase their capacity. So, you know, it's all locally mandated by state government and local government. And some of the teams are allowing way more fans than 25% we have in Milwaukee. So at some point, you know, it's going to get back to it. But yeah, it's just very welcome to have people back in the stands. And, you know, that means we have ushers and vendors and all these other people whose lives depend on it as well, you know, to put people back to work. That workforce got, you know, laid off last year with no fans.
You know, you mentioned heating up, and Corbin Burnes started hot. You know, what did he get? 4-game span with 40 strikeouts and no walks, and now here he is. Do we know what's wrong with him? And
well, he's sidelined, and they're not allowed. If a player tests positive for COVID, they're not allowed to announce that unless the player gives us permission. And if he doesn't give permission, then they just say he's on the injury list with no reason given. So you can deduce what's going on there, Larry, from just what is said and what's not said. So, you know, apparently he had a positive COVID test. You know, a lot of the players have been vaccinated, but it's like any other person. It's up to individual choice. You cannot mandate it. And so the thing about that is if you have like a hamstring injury or a sore this or a sore that, you can sort of know what the timeline is going to be, but we don't know when he'll be back because COVID, you get to come back when you test negative over X number of times. These players are tested every other day. And so at some point he'll be back, and we'll see if this pause, you know, takes the edge off his game. Like you said, 40 strikeouts and no walks. No one had ever done that before to start a season. No starting pitcher had. So, and Woodruff, you know, has been crazy good too. Their pitching has just been so good. And then the back of their bullpen, you know, they have one of the best closers in the game in Josh Hader. And so their pitching has just been really, really good, which is good because their offense, as we noted earlier, has scuffled a lot. And they've battled through these injuries. They've been a very fascinating team because there's literally been a lot of moving parts as players come and go and on the injured list and stuff. And it's let's put it this way, as someone who looks at it from a journalistic point of view, we've had lots to write about.
Yeah, there's plenty to write about. Well, I forget who it was. I think it was David Banks for the Associated Press may have said this, but it was like, if David Stearns or counsel get a whole bunch of questions about one position or another, and they have to say it's a long season, injuries happen, and they're going to be able to point to April of 2021 as a good reason to have some depth and some pretty good players behind you.
Yeah, it got tested right away. You know, I said that the trainer's room is like Baskin Robbins. You have to take a number and wait your turn. You know, they've only got three or four athletic trainers, and they're treating like, you know, 17 players. So it's like SRO in the trainer's room. And so, but you know, they did just play 60 games last year, and it was such a weird year with COVID. And there does seem to be quite a few injuries across the game early this year. So, you know, they only played 60 games last year, and now we're playing 162 again. So it's going to be interesting just to see, you know, the teams that are able to keep their best players on the field the most are probably going to be the teams that advance to the postseason. So we do have a long ways to go, but considering how bad it could have been for the Brewers record-wise, you know, they're very pleased that they made it through April with a good record, first place standing in their division. And so, you know, Yelich and Kane came back last night. They're going to start getting more people back in the coming weeks. And so we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, they had a lot of guys step up and fill in the gaps for them.
I'm optimistic. Oh, guys, I'm invariably optimistic, but I'm optimistic about their chances to get into the postseason. Who knows what happens then, but I think the Brewers are in pretty good shape, given they now have, I think they're tied for the best record in baseball with a whole bunch of other teams. The Cardinals are coming on strong. They've won five in a row. But I hope it's going to be a good year.
Larry, the Brewers have had bragging rights over the Cubs so far. They've played three series with them and won all three. So I can tell you, a lot of Brewers fans, that makes a lot of Brewers fans smile just in of itself, that, you know, they are ahead of the Cubs right now.
Tom, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's really always fun. I hope you'll come back and be with us again sometime. I hope so.
Oh, you know it. You know it. Thanks so much, Larry.
Tom Hodricourt is the great writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He covers the Brewers and Major League Baseball for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And it's always fun to have him come by. He's always got some good stories to tell. And always fun to have you listening in. Just to let you know, tomorrow on this show, we'll talk about baby animal season, and we'll talk about the bird migration with Wisconsin Wildlife folks David Drake and Jamie Knack. So I hope you'll join us for that tomorrow. But in the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mingler.